So we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 11 this morning. This is the story of the Tower of Babel, and it begins as the descendants of Noah have been tasked back in Genesis 9 with repopulating the earth, being fruitful and spreading out over the whole world is what they've been told. And so we're going to pick up in verse 1 of chapter 11. It says, now the whole earth used the same language. By the way, wouldn't that be amazing? If the whole earth spoke the same language, wouldn't that be fun? Then you'd know what the people at the grocery store are saying about you. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same, of course they'd also know what you're saying about them. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words, and it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used the brick and stone, and they used tar for mortar. Now, this is a fairly interesting story. Shinar is actually what we would call the land of Babylon. It is in what is modern, it inhabits most of modern Iraq and some of modern Iran. And so that's the region we're talking about. Generally in the Old Testament, you'll hear it referred to as the land of Shinar, but sometimes you'll hear a term used for the larger area, which is Mesopotamia. And so this is the region we're talking about. So it says, as Noah's descendants are traveling, they're journeying, it says they came to this place. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this story, and so context is going to be really important in this story, and understanding kind of the ancient world. So these people are traveling, and it says, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used the brick for stone, and they used tar for mortar. Now, what is really interesting about this story is you've got a group of people, and they have been traveling. Now, we generally assume that these people were nomadic, that they have been living a lifestyle where they have been nomads, they've been traveling. Now, if you've been traveling and you live a nomadic lifestyle, what do you probably live in? You live in a tent. You live in a tent. Now, some of you may like to camp. I don't really understand why you would, but some of you may sometimes just like to go outside and sleep on the ground. And if you enjoy that, I can give you a list of some psychiatrists that you could talk to. But some people really are into that thing. They like the outdoors. Caleb and Sam used to ask, Dad, why don't we go camping? I said, I'll tell you what, one night we'll go outside and we'll sleep under the trampoline. I said, we'll throw some blankets over the edge of it, and it'll be just like camping out. And they lasted an hour before they decided they wanted to go inside, which meant my plan worked to perfection. And I got to sleep inside, which was what I was after the whole time. But, you know, they've lived in tents. Now, understand, living as a nomadic lifestyle and living in tents, there's a couple of things that become really important. Number one is that when you live a nomadic lifestyle, tents do not offer a significant amount of protection. If there are other people who might be a threat to you, or even just wild animals, tents do not offer a lot of protection. And also in a nomadic lifestyle, you are limited to how many people can live with you, because only a certain number of people can live off the land when you're living in a nomadic lifestyle. At some point, you get too many people, and then you kind of have to separate and go your separate ways. And so what's happened here is these people who have been tasked with spreading out over the whole world and repopulating have come to this place, and they went, this is a really nice place. This plain in Shinar, there's water, and there's ways to, places to grow food, and I mean, this is a really nice place, so let's do this. Let's stay here. Now, verse 4 is where we're going to get into really some of the meat of this thing. It says, they said, come, let us build for ourselves a city. Now, before we get to the next part, think about what comes with a city. If you have a city instead of just this nomadic existence, what does that provide you? It provides you protection, okay? We're not going to live in tents anymore. We're going to have brick and, you know, this stone that's been burned to make bricks, and we're going to have tar. And so when you think about stone and tar, you think about permanent buildings like homes, and probably for protection, what?
A wall.
A wall. We'll probably have a wall around us. We're going to have a walled city. We're going to have permanent buildings. And with permanent homes, we're going to have businesses, and we're going to have commerce, and we're going to have trade, and we're going to have all these things that seem like an advancement over this current nomadic lifestyle. And most of us can probably appreciate why they would want to do that, okay? So come, let us build for ourselves a city. And he says, and a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make for ourselves, now this is important, let us make for ourselves a name, otherwise we'll be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, what had they been told to do? Scatter over, go around the world, repopulate and spread out over the whole earth. Now, how many of you have ever been told to do something and partway through it, you came up with a better plan? Probably everybody in this room at some point is like, I got a better idea. Don't you love when somebody, you know, you ask somebody to do something and then they tell you they got a better idea? I was teasing Jamie a couple weeks ago. We go out to lunch one day a week, and it was Wednesday. Jamie comes in and says, "We doing staff lunch day?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Where do you want to eat?" I said, "You gonna let me pick?" He goes, "Yeah, you pick." So I gave him three places, and we went to some place that was none of those three. And I was joking. I told Brittany about it. And here's Brittany's response. Welcome to my life. So I gave Jamie some suggestions, and he had a better idea. And by the way, we went there, and there are a few places in town I can't find something to eat, so we ate there, and it was fine. And then Brittany showed up while we were eating, and I felt like I'd been scammed. I felt like I'd been set up because Brittany just happened to show up where Jamie picked, and they still contend that was an accident, and I still don't believe them. But anyway, sometimes we have a better idea in the middle, and so God has given these people a mission, go out and repopulate, and they started the journey, but then they get to a place like, man, this is a nice place, and I'm kind of tired of living in a tent. I'd like to live in a house, and this is really nice, and this is a great place, and there's food, and there's water, and we could build a city, and we could be protected, and we can make a name for ourselves. Now, one of the things that's fascinating about that is that everybody in this room can connect with that statement. We can make a name for ourselves, right? Because as Americans, we're proud of being Americans, aren't we? We're generally, I thought more people would go, yeah. But, you know, we're America, you know, America. You know, we're proud of being Americans. We're proud of our country. We like our country generally more than other people's countries, and we even talk about it. And so we understand this concept of national pride, that this desire to have an identity, not just as humans, but as people of a nation, in some cases people of a state. So we understand this idea of wanting to make a name for ourselves. That makes sense to us. That resonates with us. And so nothing is happening here which doesn't make sense to us. These people have traveled. They found a place. They've decided to settle there. We want a city. We want commerce. We want protection. We want to make a name for ourselves. We want to be a great people. And what we don't want is to be scattered all over the place. So now we come, we're gonna circle back to the tower. Now this is where the story gets really interesting. It says that one of the things they wanted to build was a tower whose top will reach into heaven. Now we all know this is what becomes known as the Tower of Babel. And what's really interesting about the Tower of Babel is there are a lot of interpretations of this. And so when I was kind of researching this, I was like, okay, so what kind of tower was this? And what I found is, was not particularly surprising, is that towers in Mesopotamia, in that region, were not particularly unusual, although this is likely the first one because of the way the story's told. This is likely what is called a ziggurat. Some of you have probably heard of those before. They are essentially stepped pyramids, and they were fairly common in Mesopotamia throughout the period of the 2000 BC. But what's interesting about ziggurats, if that is in fact what this is that ziggurats were built for the expressed purpose of being built up towards the gods so that a god or gods could then descend on the tower to a temple that was on the side for worship. Now that's... The Lord just texted somebody and said, "You got it!" That's good news. Now, a lot of times we don't, when we read the story of the Tower of Babel, we kind of envision that what's happening is that the people in Babel are trying to somehow reach God for the purpose of who knows what. But what's interesting is that if you go back in the cultural, in the culture of Mesopotamia, that these towers were normally built so that the gods could come down, and then normally there was a temple that was built right beside this tower where then God could then go into that temple and be worshipped. So what's really interesting about the possibilities of this story is that what's happened is these people have built this city, and now they start building this tower. Now, question. Why are they building the tower? Now, one would assume that there have been oral traditions that have been passed down through the generations. How many of you assume that these people know about the flood? Jim and Roxanne are the only two people here who think they know about the flood. Well, let me just throw this out to you. Did you guys know that almost every continent on earth has a culture that has a flood story? Did you know that? Did you know in Chinese mythology there's a flood story, and there's a flood story in Sumeria, and there's a flood story in Mesopotamia, and there's a flood story. Even some of the Native Americans in North and South America had flood narratives in their oral traditions. Now, why do you suppose that is? Well, if all these people were descendants of the people at Babel, and the people at Babel got scattered all over the world, guess what they took with them when they got scattered? Their story about the flood, right? So it makes perfect sense. So these people probably know about the flood. I mean, they're descendants of Noah. They've heard about the flood. They know what their mission is. So of course, they know about the flood. Well, here's the question. Do they know why the flood came? And the answer is probably sure. They probably were told. Why did the flood come? Because God was angry. See, once upon a time, God was in the garden with man. He was in proximity to man. He was in one of the professors that I was listening to his lectures on this. He called it sacred space. That God had a sacred space in the garden with man, and that man ruined that. And at that point, God's sacred space among people was gone. And so then, what's the next thing that happens? Mankind separates from God so much that he becomes vile and evil and wicked and violent. And so God destroys man with a flood. And so now, here are these people, and they recognize that there is no connection with God anymore. And because our ancestors didn't have a connection with God, what happened to them? Well, they got destroyed. So if we don't want to be destroyed, what do we need? We need connection with God. And so if he is up there, and we're down here, what do we need to do? We need to build something so we can get up to him, so he can get down to us. So we're going to build this tower. We are going to reestablish connection with God. Now, how many of you think that sounds like a bad thing? Man, that sounds like a bad thing, right? Doesn't sound like a bad thing that people want to reconnect with God. It sounds on the surface like a good thing. But I want you to notice at the end of verse 4, what the motive is. Let us make for ourselves a name, otherwise we'll be scattered abroad over the face of the earth. Now, let me ask you a question. In the ancient world, what did people believe they got out of a relationship with God? You offered God worship. You offered him sacrifices. In exchange for your worship and sacrifices, what did God provide you? Safety, protection, in some cultures, fertility, good crops, rain, absence of natural disasters. I mean, all of these are things that were connected with worships of God in different cultures, right? So if we want to be safe, if we want to be protected, there's more to it than just building a city and building a wall and having these brick buildings. We need God's protection because our ancestors didn't have it. And what happened to them? Well, they got destroyed. The flood wiped them out. So if we don't want to be wiped out, if we don't want to be scattered all over the world, if we don't want to be destroyed, we need to reestablish connection with God. Now, as you hear that and you go, oh, okay. How many of you have ever had somebody who entered into a relationship with you because they wanted something from you? Probably everybody in this room can think of somebody who's like, oh yeah, I know that person. The only time they call is when they want something or when they need something. You know, so it's those people that when you see them on caller ID, you're like, I'm not answering that because they probably want something. They want to ride somewhere. They need something. We understand that. Let me ask you, how many of us are like that with God? If you ask most people why they go to church, you know what a lot of them will tell you? Because I'm supposed to. Because if I don't go to church, I won't be forgiven. Or if I don't go to church, I won't be blessed. Or I won't get these material blessings. Or I won't get forgiveness of sins. Or God won't answer my prayers. And by the way, all of those are wrong answers. Why do you go to church? To worship. And why do we worship God? Because he's worthy. We don't worship God because we get something back. We don't worship God because he's done these things or he's promised to give us this or that. God has always desired worship because he's worthy of it. He's the creator of the universe, right? That's the whole concept. It's always been the concept. That relationship with God, worship of God, is not because of what God might do for you in return. And how do we know that? Because you hate when people enter into a relationship with you for that. You don't want people to enter into a relationship with you because of what they can get out of you. That's not what you want. So why would God want that? God desires worship simply because he's worthy of it. The purpose of worship is to exalt God, not so that God can exalt you. Now, does that make sense? Somebody at least nod. I feel like I've lost you. I mean, you guys, you see where I'm going with this, right? That the worship of God is so that he can be exalted and not so that he can exalt us. Now, here's what should be terrifying to us. How much do we sound like these people? I hear people say it all the time. Man, we really need to turn back to worshiping God so he'll heal our nation. Or I really need to go to church because I need a better job and I need material blessings. Or, you know, I need to start worshiping again so God will hear my prayers or so God will grant forgiveness or God will heal this sick person that I'm friends with. I just need to worship God so that he'll do all of these things. It's ingrained in us to think that way. And ironically, one of the oldest stories in the Bible warns us of the dangers of not worshiping God simply because of who he is. So these people have arrived at this plane and they're like, we need this tower to invite God to come down so that we can worship him, so that he'll bless us and we'll make a name for ourselves. Now, if some of you are sitting there going, yeah, I'm not buying that, let's look at verse 5. Look at the first line. The Lord came down to see the city. Oh, they built a tower. Let's go down and see what they're doing. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language, and this is what they've begun to do. They didn't do what I told them to do. They've come up with a better plan. They've built them a city. And look, they've built a tower and bite me down. And look at what they've done. And now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language. Okay, so we're going to stop right there. We're going to get into the punishment in a minute. But let's stop right there. So they build this tower and God comes down. And he sees what they've accomplished. Is he impressed? I don't know. He's like, he sounds kind of impressed, right? Look at what they've done. Look at what they've done. You know what? They've got one language. They're all working together. Guess what they're going to be able to accomplish? Anything. Now take a minute and think what the humanity that God's created has accomplished just in your lifetime. Internet, Bluetooth, that's pretty impressive. We could tamper with genes. We've mapped genetic code. And we can manipulate the genes in living things, plants and animals. We've genetically manipulated crops. We can clone animals. Just last week, we hit an asteroid moving 15,000 miles an hour with a rocket a million miles from Earth. That's pretty impressive. The technology we've developed, we can take a bad organ out of a person and replace it with a working one. Organ transfer. I mean, look at the things we've developed. Look at the technologies we've created. And way back in the Old Testament, God goes, look at them. Now, you see what we've made here. They're in our image. They're smart people. And they're going to be able to accomplish anything. But God doesn't say it like it's a good thing, right? It's almost like, yeah, this could be a problem. So we're going to go down and confuse their language. But let's look at the next line. We're going to do that so they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from over the face of the whole earth. And they stopped building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. And from there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, I'm not going to get into this morning, did they migrate from there or did he just teleport them? I love the teleportation concept. By the way, one of the things that's interesting is that if you go to multiple parts of the world, you will see structures very much like the one built at Babel. The Incas, the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, you see them throughout Europe. These towers that are very similar in structure. Isn't it interesting that the ability to build those things all of a sudden just popped up all over the world at the same time? That's fascinating, isn't it? I'm sure scientists have a really good explanation for it. What? Aliens. Ancient aliens. If you watch Ancient Aliens, stop. Just stop it. Stop it forever. All right. Now let's go back a slide if we can. I'm trying to confuse Belinda this morning. Okay, thank you. So this is kind of the interesting thing about this story. So we've got this effort that man has made to reconnect with God. And God is so unhappy with them that he does the very thing they did not want to happen. Why did they build the city in the first place? So they wouldn't be scattered. And God was so unhappy with them that what did he do to them? He punished them with the one thing they feared the most. You know what? You don't want to be scattered? I'll show you scattered. I'm fixing to show you scattered. And he scatters them all over the earth. So here's the question. What's he so upset about? What's he punishing them for? If this is really an effort to reconnect with God and reestablish sacred space for him so that he could be worshiped, what's he so mad about? Motive. He's upset with the motive. They don't want to worship God because of who he is. They don't want to worship God because he's the creator. They don't want to worship him for all the amazing things that he is or because that he's worthy of their praise. They have a motive, and it's not about him. It's about them. It's about them. It was always about them. And they recognized that they needed God. They recognized that they needed his protection, that they needed his blessings. They at least were smart enough to recognize that. But then what they did is they tried to mask their desires. They tried to hide it in worship. This sermon should be preached in every church in America. If not this one, some variation of it. Because we sound so much like these people. This whole church thing, it's all really about us. It's about me getting forgiveness. It's about, you know, it's about me being entertained by the worship service. I like the songs. Or I'm going to choose this church or that church because I like the music or I don't like the music. And where does God fit into all this? Where does worship of him fit into this? Well, it really doesn't. Because it's really about me. It's about what I like. It's about what's convenient for me. I feel good enough to go to church. I'm not too tired to go. I'll worship when he just should be happy whenever I take the time to worship him. Now, some of you are going, Stuart, I would never say that. Would you do it? I mean, do your actions suggest that that's how you view worship? You know, God should just be happy I take any time to worship him. He should be happy whenever I take the time to say a prayer. Even if it's only twice a week, he should be happy. He's lucky I talk to him at all. Some of you are sitting there going, dude, you've not stopped saying stuff like that. But is that how we think? Is that how the modern church thinks? And there are times when I wonder if church buildings today are not the modern incarnation of the Tower of Babel. We've built this building. We invite God to come down to it. For what purpose? So we can worship him so that he'll do what? Forgive us, bless us, heal us, protect us. Save our country? It's terrifying how much like these people we sound. And we don't even realize it. We're like, oh, well, that's just the way it is. And we wonder why the church isn't flourishing anymore. It shouldn't be that complicated for us. It's right there in front of us. That story has always been there. It's been there as long as there's been a church. And it's like we don't connect it. It's like, well, the Tower of Babel, that's just kind of this standalone story. And all that story's meant is to tell us why Chris has a job teaching French. And some of you have never learned proper English. You know, that's all it is. That story is just in the Bible, so we know why people speak different languages and why there are pyramids in Belize. Well, what if that story has a much deeper meaning that we're missing? What if this story is about what happens when we try to hijack God's redemptive plan for our own selfish purposes? What if that's what Babel's about? What if this is about God's anger when we pretend to worship Him when it's really about wanting Him to worship us? That's crazy, isn't it? And it's always been there. It's always been right in front of us. And we look at this story and we go, oh, God was mad at them because they built a tower. By the way, take a minute and think about this story. Why would He be mad about them building a tower? I mean, we always read the Tower of Babel and go, oh, they built a tower. Yeah, of course He was mad. Do any of you remember a prohibition about building towers anywhere in the Old Testament? No? There's got to be more to it, right? He's mad enough to scatter them. What if this morning, the very thing that caused God to scatter these people and punish them so severely, what if that's the same thing that brought you here today? It wasn't to worship God. It wasn't to acknowledge who He is and what He's done. It's not to acknowledge His greatness and His love and His mercy. It was really about seeing what I could get out of Him in exchange for that. That's a terrifying thought. At least it should terrify us. It really ought to. It really should bother us. That if that is really our motivation, what if that is really what we think about God's redemptive plan? And God says, I put this plan in place so that you could be brought back into relationship with Me, not for what I can do for you, but what you can bring Me in worship. Because that's always what I wanted. Worship is part of that relationship. And so at Babel, God says, you know what? You're trying to get back in touch with Me, and I appreciate that, but you got all the wrong reasons in your head. You're thinking about all the wrong things. You should be trying to reestablish relationship with Me simply so that you can worship Me, not because of what you can get out of Me. That's not what this is about. One of the things that's really interesting about the story, and we're going to close with this as the praise team gets ready to come up and lead us in our communion song this morning. Do you know what what happens in the very next chapter of Genesis after the Tower of Babel? It's funny that I'd never noticed this, but you know what happens in chapter 12? We meet Abraham. The very next chapter in Genesis, after man's failed attempt to reconnect with God, God starts His plan through Abraham. Very next chapter. That's what Jamie's going to be preaching on next Sunday. Jamie's going to be bringing a message on how after man's failed attempt at Babylon, at the plain of Shinar, to create this sacred space for His own selfish reasons, God will begin His redemptive plan through Abraham. And so it's amazing the connection, and we just kind of go, oh my gosh, it never occurred to me. The Tower of Babel and Abraham are literally verses away from each other. And I think it's not an accident. I think it's because God wanted the children of Israel, as He's recounting this information to Moses, He wanted them to understand, this is what happened at the flood. This is what happened when man tried to get something out of me without really loving and worshiping me. And after that, after I scattered him, after I punished him, then I was ready to start my plan in earnest through a commitment to Abraham. So this morning, you know, if you're just sitting there this morning going, "Wow, I'd never heard this version of the Tower of Babel before." Good. Then that's good. Here's my goal for you today. And it's not to go back and say, you know, I'm going to put a link on the church's Facebook page to the YouTube video of this guy's lecture. John Walton is his name. Don't laugh about his name, John Walton. He was named John Walton before the John Boy's daddy was. But I'll put the link up. So if you're curious and you want to watch his lecture on this, it's like an 8-minute thing. But here's really what I want today for all of us is to do some honest evaluation of why we worship. What's our motive? When we go to church, when we walk through the door of the church, or we bow our head at home to pray, or when we open God's word wherever we may be, what are we after? What do we want? And I don't think there's anything wrong with claiming the promises that God's given us. I want to be clear about that. God has promised us a lot of things through his word, and I don't think there's anything wrong with claiming those things. But at the end of the day, our worship needs to be pure and honest, and for it to be pure and honest, it needs to be about God and not about us. It's got to be about him. And that's why we worship him when we're being blessed, and we worship him when we're not. You remember Paul sitting in a prison cell in Philippi, chained to the floor, and what did he do? He worshiped. He worshiped, and he didn't worship so God would bust him out of prison. He worshiped because he loved God, and God was worthy of his worship, even sitting in jail. God is worthy of our worship. He is worthy of our praise.